I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All Stars, geeks of the world, and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. That guy right over there is Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Scott Johnson. I am so glad it's Friday.
Oh, man. Let me tell you.
Because it's Current Geek time, obviously.
Well, and I'm getting like authentic Southern food after this. So,
what are you getting?
We got a place. There's a place called Bubba's here in Salt Lake City that is.
That's a chain. It's a shrimp chain. It's based on the movie.
Different place. Bubba okay, Gump's. Good. Bubba Gump's, different deal. So Bubba's is like a bar mostly, but then they got this incredibly good like shrimp etouffee and like stuff that's
Bubba
real
Gump's.
Authentic.
You're just talking about Bubba Gump's.
The people that run it are from New Orleans. I'm sure.
It's like a bar.
I'm sure it's not Bubba Gump's. I'm 100% sure. Anyway, it's good to have you here as always. We have a guest like we often do. In fact, we always do. We have one guest today. His name is George Corleone. He's on the line. Hi, George.
Hey, guys.
Good to have you here, man. Tell people, okay, so you come to us with a very, I think, unique set of skills, as what's his name would say in the Taken movies. Except yours are very, very unique. You are kind of a language expert, but not in the way people might see on the front of things. Explain what you do.
Okay, so
it's a hard question.
I am the vice president of the Language Creation Society. I'm the host of the Conlangery podcast. That from the fact that I am a conlanger, a person who constructs languages, constructed languages, we call conlangs.
If you wanted to make a whole new Klingon language, for example, you'd be the guy I want to go to work on that, or some other alien language.
Yeah, well, you know, there's plenty of us out there. I'm here sort of representing the Language Creation Society, which our goal is really to promote the art of conlanging. So, you know, we support all kinds of people who do this, just some people who just do it as a hobby. There are a very small number of people like David Peterson, Paul Frommer, who have done it professionally for movies and such. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's an interesting thing.
It sounds fascinating.
I mean, the most famous is like Klingon or Quenya, things like that. But this could be just somebody saying, hey, I've got a story or a game I'm running and I want to develop a really rich language to go with that, huh?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, there's people who just do it just to do it for themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
There are a lot of people who do it sort of for fiction and stuff. We actually have a jobs board and you can post up a job. And it could be just like you're writing a novel and you want just like the barest, even if you just want the barest minimum, just so you can get realistic names for characters and stuff.
You ever have anybody come to you and say, hey, I want to have a secret language between me and my best friend in high school, so only we understand it. And I've got a twin and we want to have our own little language and we want to fool everybody and have them have no idea what we're talking about. Has that ever come up?
Well, I mean, there are. You know, there are people who are like that, who like make their own like secret language that they write their journals in or they talk to one friend in. They're not usually as much in the online communities, but they're definitely there.
Well, they exist, Tom. It's true. They're out there somewhere. All right. Well,
I'm sure that's rule 61 of the internet.
Yeah. Keep a nice point between it and 63 is always a good idea. All right, well, let's dive into the headlines and talk more today.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom, take it away.
Current Geek, staying up on top of the upfront sales presentations. I'm going to bring you facts, going to bring you figures, projections for ad sales in the coming quarter. No, I'm not. Basically, all people care about when the upfronts happen are what got canceled. What's coming soon? It's too early for the announcements of what's coming, but we do have the cancellations. Among the fallen are Agent Carter, Castle, and the Muppets.
No!
Now, there's a lot of listed in this Vox article that we already knew were canceled, like Heroes Reborn. Some of us knew that was canceled before it even aired. and Supergirl is getting moved from CBS to the CW. It's not getting canceled.
It's rightful place, don't you think? A little bit. Like it feels
kinda,
like a CW show.
There.
Sure.
Yeah. And there's now a petition.
Flash is on CW, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, Flash, Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow. Like,
yeah,
put Supergirl right in there.
Yep.
Just go all the DC stuff in one place.
Yeah.
And there's a petition to get Netflix to save Agent Carter already.
Well, good. I mean, look, you can't put out a big major motion picture that just creamed it over the weekend and have her picture up there and have her feature in the film. I'm not saying how, it's not a spoiler, everybody, but she features in the film. You can't do that and not expect a bunch of people to feel something and react by starting a petition. I'm not surprised by that at all. You think it'll work? You think we'll get Agent Carter back, Tom, or you think we're done?
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Obviously, Netflix is willing to do as many Marvel shows as they can, since they're up to six now.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all in the Defenders universe.
Mm.
So going to Agent Carter not only branches them out of the Defender universe, but it also brings them over into the S.H.I.E.L.D. universe, which is the property of ABC right now. They did renew Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is coming back.
Well, it probably says something more about me than it does about these shows, but every one of these, George, looks like shows that could move to Netflix. Like every single one you've mentioned, we take Supergirl out because she's moving to the CW where she belongs, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I think that's great. It fits over there. But Agent Carter, Castle, and Muppets, even Muppets, all sound like something that would thrive on Netflix. What do you think?
Well, I mean, what couldn't thrive on Netflix?
That's a good point.
That's a question. You know, looking at the list of canceled shows, unfortunately, like I am a grad student. I have zero time for watching TV. So I'm like, I've seen Castle. I'd like to see Agent Carter and a bunch of these other ones. I just haven't had time. A lot of it is like I'm looking at these things and seeing, oh, these are canceled. Maybe these are ones that I can like watch the entirety of now.
Can we put George on the back of the DVD box and have it just say Castle? I've seen it, George Corley.
I think I might actually push some people over the edge into buying that.
All right, I'm ready.
If anyone still buys DVDs, anyway.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to point out here is we are seeing Hayley Atwell signed up for a new show. So even if Netflix were to want to do Agent Carter, I'm not sure they could get Hayley.
Oh, yeah. No, her star is on the rise, as the kids say. And I suspect that wherever she's headed will be great. And I will miss her as Agent Carter. But hey, we got, what, two seasons out of it? It's not bad.
Yeah. Better than nothing.
Yep.
Motherboard reported how the University of Pennsylvania computer science professor Matt Blaze was walking through a parking garage at the Philadelphia Convention Center and noticed a Google Maps van parked in the corner, except it did not appear to be a Google Maps van other than the logo for Google Maps that was slapped on the side, mostly because instead of having mapping cameras on top, it had automated license plate recognition readers, or ALPRs, on top. It was a surveillance van looking at license plates, and the Philadelphia Police Department now has admitted that, yes, it did own the truck, and it doesn't know why it was parked there, and it's launching an inquiry.
Okay, well, I mean, I was worried you were going to say somebody has figured out a new scam where if they look like a Google photo truck, then they can, you know, scam a bunch of people, and we just all go, oh, that's Google.
That someone is the Philadelphia Police Department, apparently.
Wow. Well,
the thing I got to say is, like, this is the equivalent of, like, the glasses with the nose and mustache kind of disguise. Because this thing looks absolutely nothing like a Street View car. It's a van. It's got these little tiny camera things, and it's got like Google Maps splattered on the back. Whereas, you know, the real ones are the colorful little sedans with the giant thing on top.
Yeah.
Well,
it's the
modern day equivalent of the van that says cleaning company on the side. And you're like, wait a minute. Why doesn't it actually have a name? Yeah. Why does it just say cleaning company?
Well, I'm going to make a PSA around this because it's not necessarily connected to it, but it reminded me of it, and I think it's important. And Tom, you're a big security guy, so you'll probably applaud my decision to talk about this. It's real brief, but our collective friend, Brian Ibbett, ran into a problem a couple of days ago, and we actually played the phone calls on the air before we knew what was going on. But here's the short of it. Somebody pretending to be his son, Tristan, scoured all the Facebooks, including his, and all the ones that are connected to him, including his grandparents, and found as many references as he could so that he could call the grandparents, fake an accident, tell them he needed money, and not to tell my parents or I'll be in huge trouble, and send and wire me the money, and they fell for it. They said, oh my gosh, we have to help him. They bailed him out. They thought they were bailing him out. $2,800. It looked all on the up and up until Ibbot finally got a hold of his in-laws and said, no, 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 he doesn't even know what's going on. Like, this never had anything to do with Ibbot. So I just want to throw it out there, everybody. Have a family password. Come up with some way of, like, I don't know, a secret handshake or something so that you're not falling for grandma scams, because it made me feel really sad for these people.
Grandma scams, the worst.
Oh, it's the freaking worst.
I was thinking of when my grandma used to scam me. Sorry.
All the time. Eat your hard candy, Tom. And you'd say, oh, that looks good. And then you'd find out it was terrible.
I'd fall asleep and then she'd steal my wallet.
Oh, grandma. Jeez. Anyway.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off will return to select theaters across the country on May 15th and 18th in honor of the 30th anniversary of Ferris Bueller's Day Off coming to theaters. Yay. 30 years ago. It's one of those Fathom Events things. You've seen those advertised when you're sitting waiting for a movie sometimes. Turner Classic Movies and Fathom Events will present two showings each day in 650 theaters nationwide. And they'll have some interviews in there with John Hughes, other cast members, as well as playing the movie. So kind of cool.
All right, George. I don't know how old a guy you are, but you're a graduate student. So I'm going to guess you're younger than Tom and I. So did this movie have any impact on you at all before I tell you how much of an impact it had on me? But let's hear how it lands on a slightly younger generation.
Honestly, I didn't see it, you know, obviously I didn't see it when it came out. I saw it later. So it's not a huge impact on me. It was entertaining when I saw it. But,
okay, good enough. No, that's totally, yeah. That totally works. But I've run into people who said, I hate that movie and I can't even stand being near them because come on, it's one of the greatest films ever made. But I'll also admit being, you know, roughly Ferris Bueller's age when the movie came out, his represented on film age. It had a real impact on me. Tom, I'm sure this is a big one for you.
I have something to admit to you, Scott.
What?
I did not see this till college.
Oh my gosh. But so still it resonated. Resonates.
I remember being 16 when this movie hit theaters and all my friends talking about Donka Shane and oh, he took the car. And like, so I felt like I'd seen it. Because back then, kids, ask your parents, nobody cared about spoilers. Didn't get to the movie theater to see the movie.
Yeah.
You just heard people talking about it, yeah, and you liked it because that's the way we did it.
That's where it was done.
I did catch the end of it when it came to broadcast TV. Also, ask your parents. Movies used to come to broadcast TV shortly after they left the theaters, and I saw the parade scene, and I was like, "Oh, that's the Donka Shane thing. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's why they were talking about Donka Shane. I get it." And then finally, I think my freshman year in college, I rented it on a videotape, ask your parents, and I was like, oh, this is a fantastic movie, and I've loved it ever since.
You know, so much of what you just said is a bygone era now, and it makes me feel old. But I'll tell you, that movie had such an impact on me. It's all I could think about. It's all my friends and I could talk about. It felt like it was being made for us. None of us were as cool as Ferris. We were all right around Cameron's level of life, and so there was something about that friendship that just worked, and it's John Hughes's, perhaps his greatest piece of work. Ever. And I know there are people out there going, oh no, Breakfast Club or freaking 16 Candles was a bigger deal or whatever, you know, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Absolutely. Amazing films. All in my top 20 of all time. But Ferris Bueller's Day Off, man. That was something else.
That was a Bueller. Day off.
Yeah, Bueller. See, he even knows. Look at this. Young generation even knows. Look how important it is. So everyone go out and celebrate it. Go see it if you can and, you know, support it, I guess, or I don't know, or go rent it. I've got it on Blu-ray or some DVD collector's thing. And
go see it in the movie theater. It's kind of cool.
Yeah,
actually.
Do that.
I'm going to do that with Mystery Science Theater, actually, on June 28th.
Oh, no way. That sounds awesome.
Very cool. We're going to do a reunion thing.
Yeah.
Same thing, Fathom Events. Fire Axis and 2K Games posted a trailer voiced by Sean Bean, who lived through the entire trailer, spoiler, announcing Civilization VI is coming October 21st. New features include bigger cities that can span multiple tiles, new AI for historical figures that allow your relationships to develop over time, and I can't wait to play it.
You're a huge fan of the Civ series. That is known. It is known that Tom likes Civilization, and you played quite a bit.
Say it in Dothraki.
Hey, a fake language since we got George here. George, are you a fan of the Civ series? You like that stuff?
Yeah, I played a lot of Civ 5. I played a little bit Civ 4 a long time ago, and I played a lot of Civ 5. I was really interested in a lot of this stuff. The dynamic diplomacy stuff is cool. I like the thing that they're saying that they're going to have multiplayer modes where you can like play it all in a single section. So
yeah,
I don't know what that's going to look like, but if you know, you can sit down with a few friends and play it in like a couple hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather than stretching it on, that's a good way to get into that.
You guys want
to
hear? Yeah. You want to hear Ned Stark talk a little bit about the game? Let's just take a taste here.
The inventors.
Take it away, Boromir.
Yep. Here's
the
Boromir.
The architects of change.
Oh, they've got a cave troll.
The builders of a better tomorrow.
Oh, I've been shot.
With a big dowel-sized arrow. All right. So, Lord of the Rings references and stuff aside, I am very, very excited about this. This is 6 years after the last game, not including expansions or DLC, but a lot of people forget Civ 5, 2010, man. It has been a while since we've had a brand new Civ game, and people are kind of falling all over themselves, excited
has
about it.
Been has it been that long?
Yeah, it's been that long. It's crazy, right?
Wow.
2010, year of StarCraft 2 and Civ 5. I remember both those coming out, I don't know, probably weeks apart from each other. And I remember thinking, man, the top-down strategy world's about to, you know, blow off here. And, yeah, people still play it. There's tons of content for it. And I think there's even recent content for it, so it probably seems less old. But it really holds up. So if you did not get on board then, or even if you did and you're excited about 4X strategy, holy crap, dude, I can't.
No, you have to go back and play the original Civilization in emulation mode and work your way through all six.
Because how will I know how the story goes, right? I need to know how the world evolves and all that. Yeah, exactly.
Otherwise, how can you appreciate the advances that you...
So the narrators for these games have always been a big deal. So I just wanted to mention that. Like, Leonard Nimoy did four. Five was, and I forgot his name, English actor that's famous and everyone loves him. And then... Now, potentially, we don't know this for sure because it's just the trailer, but I think this means, because the last two trailers featured those two voice actors, I think that means that Sean Bean is narrating the entire freaking thing, and I'm excited.
Like he's going to be all the AIs, too.
Yeah, and he'll be the one that you hit a new age, and he'll go, the gold age. You've hit it.
William Morgan Shepherd was the narrator.
Oh, that's the guy, and he is great. That guy was
I could understand why you didn't remember that name.
Yeah, that's a hard name. It's three names. Three names are harder than two.
He was in Wild at Heart, too.
Oh, well, I forgot that movie, too. But I didn't forget Civilization 4 or 5. So anyway, look for it. October.
Now, hopefully,
already.
Civilization 6 will have a technology that you can learn called Hyperloop, because that's a real thing. Hyperloop Technologies has now changed its name to Hyperloop 1 and showed off a test of its linear electric motor on a test track in the desert north of Las Vegas. It was not in the tube yet, so it didn't get the high speeds that you get when there's no air resistance, but it was a test of the motor. It's a 10-foot sled propelled along a test track into a pile of sand at a force of around 2.5 Gs. And Gadget says that CTO Brogan Bam Brogan, also one of the best names ever invented, and I believe he invented it, hopes to have a quarter-mile track with tubes ready by the end of the year.
Oh, that's so exciting. George, where are you at with hypertubing, man, or hyperlooping?
Oh, it's super exciting. I was kind of, miffed that it wasn't, that they didn't have the tube there yet. It just was, metal thing on a track, but, baby steps, I guess.
Yeah,
but
we're getting there. Do you think it ever gets to the point where it's Futurama-like and you're like in some sort of tube where you're not hitting the sides and you just sucked through it?
I don't know. I don't know if I would want that. give me a nice, metal shell around me at least, please. But yeah, it's definitely what the article said, that this could reach like 1,200 miles per hour. Mm-hmm. That's like insane.
Yeah, it's significant. Traveling across the country. Significant for sure. Tom, you don't commute like you used to, but when you did commute, this would have been a nice little option, right? Hop
I could
in.
Just pop up to San Francisco, right?
Yeah, in like 30 minutes. It's like nothing. LA to San Francisco would be
Yeah, they say they can get you. LA to San Francisco by car is about 5 hours. Yeah. LA to San Francisco by plane in the air is about 55 minutes. LA to San Francisco on a Hyperloop is 30 minutes. Are you kidding me? Yeah. Like, the problem is going to be, how long does it take me to drive to the Hyperloop parking lot and get through security to get on the Hyperloop? Because the 30 minutes, that ain't nothing.
Yeah, it already sounds like it's better. Well, I don't know what kind of security they'll have there, but it sounds like what's better than what's going on in the TSA lately. Your flight from LA to San Francisco, as you know, because you just did one, is a lot longer than it should be. You got to get there super early. You got to stand in a horrific line. And that 55 minutes is just 1/10 of the time it takes you to travel. This is such an amazing idea if they can pull this off. I swear, Elon Musk just comes out and says, I got an idea. Here it is. And before you know it, people are testing it. I love that world that we're living in. And I know nobody's making any money. That's the thing people keep saying about Musk and about Teslas and everything else. Nobody's making money yet. But, man, we need a guy like that and more people like that that are willing to just go, what if we go in a tube? What about tubes?
Thanks, Tony Stark.
Yeah, Tony Stark.
He didn't patent this, right? He just gave it out to
people. He open sourced it, yeah.
That's amazing. Look, you can hate on PayPal all you want, but it gave us Elon Musk, so I don't hate PayPal. Yeah.
We got one more story before we talk about Axanar with George. And George actually suggested this story, and it's a fascinating one. In Captain America, Black Panther speaks his native language from Wakanda, a nation that has never been conquered. Also, in case you didn't realize, not a real nation. So couldn't go out and use the actual Wakandan language because it doesn't exist. So what language was he actually speaking? John Connie, the actor who plays T'Challa, the father of the Black Panther in the movie, speaks Hosa, a language of 7.6 million South Africans. So they use Hosa. That could have chosen to use the language that recording artist Stephen James Taylor created for the theme song to BET's Black Panther animated series, which was a constructed language, but they didn't. They thought it would be cooler to just not have to make T'Challa's father have to learn a new language, I guess.
Well, that guy's a venerable character actor. He's been around for a long time, and to maybe to have him do that was asking too much or something. I don't know. But, man, what's your take on it, George? I kind of, you know, it's funny because this is in Marvel's universe, this is a bit like Gotham or Metropolis. It's this one fake place. And otherwise, they try to be pretty realistic about locations. New York, it plays a huge role, and Miami plays a huge role, and these big cities that we already know and live in. Are actual cities as portrayed in the Marvel Universe. But we've got this Wakanda totally made up. I'll bet you there is a number of people who saw this movie. I'm not trying to comment on a huge group of people's intelligence, but I'll bet there's a fair number of people who just figure it's a real place, which is totally fine with me. But why not go that extra step and create not a fake language. I don't like the term, the connotation of that, but a language that would fit the mythical place of Wakanda.
So, having someone make a conlang would have been cool. And like Marvel has done that for movies before in Thor, the Dark World, they had David Peterson create the language for the Dark Elves. But, I'm actually not so fussed about them using Osa in the movie, or at least about them using a real language. Cause Africa is very linguistically diverse. You can pull a lot of languages there. And if Wakanda were a real place, I would expect that there would be like dozens of languages spoken there that already exist in other parts of Africa. The thing about it, and David Peterson brought this up on Tumblr, and I had the same sort of thought process that he went through, was that Wakanda is usually in like Central or East Africa. Xhosa is spoken in South Africa, so it's like it's not where they usually put Wakanda in the comics that Xhosa is spoken. So it's like, why didn't they use something that's closer to where it was? Like they could have easily gotten Swahili or something like that. Now, since then, there's it's possible that in the Marvel Cinematic Universe that Wakanda just is in South Africa. So maybe, you know, they can adjust it that way. But yeah, it's sort of an interesting story. The actors, from what I understood, like the actors actually sort of came up with this idea on their own because the script had them speaking English in the first place. It was definitely so like the whole idea for me is that maybe it was just that, you know, kudos on the actors for recognizing that, you know, they should have a different language here, but then You know, maybe they just didn't think about it enough beforehand about, you know, this is an isolated nation. They probably would not be speaking English.
Well, let me ask you this question. If, is it, it probably makes a more cost conscious choice for their budget for them to say, all right, we have three choices here. We go English, but nobody likes that, including the actors. All right. Well, we go a con lang, we make up a language, and that's going to cost money because we got to hire somebody to do it. We got to train everybody to do it. Like, it's a, you know, there's an investment in that, be it time or money. And the third option is, let's take a language that our principal actor and actors either already know or can easily repeat. And I'm guessing they went with that because, and this is maybe because this stuff you're talking about is kind of invisible to most people going to the theater. How many people in the theater outside of those who've spent time in South Africa or time in the part of Africa that Wakanda is supposed to be in would know anyway? So the bet that the theater, that the studio makes is, well, what's the easiest, cheapest thing and keeps us from just doing something dumb like English. And I think that's probably where this decision was made. That's a problem for people who like to have, you know, artificial linguistics made up like you, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the ignorance of the audience doesn't help you.
Or just a lot of thought put into what languages you use too.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Well, and that to me sounds like the most likely scenario is they didn't plan to unveil the Wakandan language. Maybe they were thinking they would get to it in the Black Panther movie, but they weren't. They just weren't going to bother with it. They weren't going to spend the time and money on it this time. And the actors said, well, shoot, we both know Xhosa. Let's do that. And so someone made the audible on, you know, at some point to go, ah, sure, fine. Okay, go for it. And it makes a lot more sense to me that way, where the actors are pushing it like, well, sure, you could have us speak English because we do know English. And that's obvious because we speak with other English speakers. But when we talk to each other, is it cool if we, you know, if we change that a little? And so it wasn't a forethought thing, is what that implies to me. It wasn't something where they made a decision. It was something where they just decided to let the actors do it and went with it.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I just think it's like a really good CGI. Like on Game of Thrones, nobody appreciates the CGI because it's so subtle, except with dragons show up or something where you're like, well, obviously. But like when there's background shots that are extremely digitally touched, you don't even think about it. It looks like natural scenery. It looks like a natural big red keep behind you. Like, it's so well done that no one sees it. And I always think, oh man, those poor CGI artists who just did this incredible illusion aren't really getting any credit for it outside of their own peers. And I just wonder if that's how it feels when you create a language for something.
Man, Scott, you just burst. Dr. Payne didn't know the dragons weren't real.
Whoops, spoiler. Hey, spoiler, guys. Those dragons are fake.
Kind of ruined Game of Thrones for Dr. Payne.
Just so you know, not
sorry,
real.
Man.
It's all right.
Spoiler alert.
Anyway.
Sorry, right. Ben.
Let's talk about this Paramount versus Axanar thing. So jump in, George. Tell us all about it. What's happening between the two and why are they fighting?
Okay, so let's start bigger picture. So Axanar, I don't know if you've covered it here before, but Axanar is a fan Star Trek production. It's set in the Star Trek universe. I think it's before the original series, I want to say. But they made a whole lot of money with crowdfunding, and they're making this movie, and Paramount and CBS, but I think it's Paramount's doing the main stuff, decided, okay, we got to stop this. We're going to sue them for copyright infringement. Now, there are a whole lot of copyright claims going on with the Paramount versus Axanar suit, and I only care, like, me talking from the LCS only cares about just this one little thing, is that Paramount listed the Klingon language as part of their copyrighted works.
Mm-hmm.
So this sort of gets into, there's an entire there's been a long discussion in the conlang community of, can we copyright conlangs? Can we protect conlangs with intellectual property law? And what we've come up with, and the LCS actually commissioned or not commission, but we got a legal firm to give us a legal memo on this. We find that, you know, it's never been really tested, but for copyright particularly, we can talk about the other kinds of IP law, but for copyright, you can't really copyright a conlang because it's a system. Mm. Now, you can copyright, you know, the description of the grammar. Like, I write up the description of the grammar of a language. Like, things like the Klingon dictionary is that. It's a description of Klingon. That is copyrightable itself, that book. Things that are written in Klingon are copyrightable. But the language itself, we don't, is not copyrightable. And we generally think that it wouldn't be a good thing to copyright conlang.
So if let me throw out an example. If Worf says something on The Next Generation, says something in Klingon, they right. can copyright that dialogue like they could the rest of their script, sure. right?
Well, think right. about it. Anybody who speaks in English in anything, they can copyright that dialogue.
Good point.
Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what I've got to do is rap, because in my head, part of me says, I kind of get where you're coming from, Paramount. It's your, you made up Klingons. That's kind of your thing. And I don't know, you know, what all the big deal is, but it's hard for me to remember. Well, no, this is actually a communicative, like complete language that people can have and speak to one another in, regardless of its origin. And it's not unlike English or Japanese or anything else in that way. And nobody's trying to copyright English. So yeah, it's good for me to work it through my head. Cause yeah. in my head, I just think, oh, well, it's just, you know, it's this fake language, but I guess that's kind of the point.
Instance, yeah. The works of Shakespeare in the original Klingon are public domain.
Right.
But if you make an original composition in Klingon, you could copyright that.
Mm. Wow.
Right. So, and that's what we're arguing. So what we've done is we filed an amicus brief. That's the friend of the court brief. We filed it to support Axanar's motion to dismiss the case. So we were all this thing said, you should read the actual amicus brief because it's hilarious. Our lawyer Mark Randazza wrote it, and there's a lot of Klingon in it. Some of the Klingon is not so good, but there's Klingon in it to
legal
sort of
Klingon.
Prove the point.
Legal
to,
Klingon.
To prove the point that it's real and you can communicate with Klingon.
Yeah.
And basically all we're arguing is that they can't claim in Klingon. Now the judge actually threw out the motion to dismiss, and they denied our right to file the amicus brief without prejudice. So that means what it means was that the judge didn't find our thoughts relevant to the motion to dismiss because he would have gone on with moving on the case, whether Klingon could be copyrighted or not. Mm. But we still have the option when it comes to the summary judgment, probably next year, if it ever gets to that, to refile it. But, at least we have actually found, when we claim that it seems like the majority of sort of lawyers that are looking at what we wrote are saying, yeah, this is right. You can't copyright a language.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I have to note here, and this is, I've taken this off of conlang.org's site. Judge Klostner, in his decision to not allow the amicus brief, said, although the court declines to address whether plaintiff's claims will prosper at this time, the court does find plaintiff's claims will live long enough to survive defendant's motion to dismiss.
Yeah.
So there's a little sense of humor going all around on this thing.
Sure. It doesn't sound like it's a problem because a little sense of humor thrown in there is still using legal language, you know, like why not? I think this is great. Like, we have covered this on the show before. We talked about it. Very cursory around the edges, though.
And by the way, it is Paramount and CBS, according to the amended complaint from March, it is a joint action by them. And that makes sense because CBS actually owns Star Trek and Paramount owns the rights to make the movies.
Mm.
So they kind of have joint ownership over a lot of this intellectual property.
So to sum it up, George, where does it end up in your mind? Where do you think this, how does this all fall out? You think Axanar will come out triumphant and this will set some precedents for future cases? Or are we back to square one after all this is over?
Well, like I say, I don't know about the overall case. And, you know, I don't really know how this particular trial is going to get out. We just saw an opportunity and we pounced on it just to do the Klingon part. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if this will even, you know, make it to a judgment. They might just settle out of court. So we took the opportunity when we had it. And if it goes to summary judgment, we'll resubmit. We might have some edits because what our lawyer came up with for intellectual property law in Klingon, for example, was not right.
Is what you're saying. I get it.
Yeah.
I love that. I love the fact that he wrote it, and I love that it's not perfect. How can you tell me this real quick before we move on? I gotta know this. Do Con Lang creators like yourself and others in the community, do you guys know multiple functional languages like the more traditional French and Spanish and all that kind of stuff? Does it extend that way, or is it just purely like, well, our native language is, and then this new thing we're doing?
No, if you're talking about conlangers generally, we are all interested in natural languages too. Most of us are. I am a graduate student in linguistics, so you know. For my real career, I'm planning to be a linguist, and studying natural languages. And a lot of us are multilingual. You don't necessarily have to be, but you know, it's a benefit. I can speak Mandarin Chinese and Spanish very well. I'm learning Ho-Chunk right now, which is a Native American language spoken here in Wisconsin.
Welcome to the podcast in Ho-Chunk.
I don't know the words to do that. Sorry.
You say, welcome to the podcast. I speak Ho-Chunk.
Pretty good, Tom. That's not bad.
But we don't have words for welcome to the podcast. I'm using English. Bienvenido al podcast.
Indeed. That's awesome stuff. And certainly more will come to light as we move forward to this stuff. Before we jump into the pop quiz, real quick, want to tell you about our friends over at Cratejoy. And that's us. Our friends are us.
Hey, look, it's the friendliest people we know.
Yeah, it's us. We have, you know, a facilitation for this, but really it's frogpants.cratejoy.com and it's us sending you stuff. In fact, I'm working right now. In fact, most of Saturday is being spent creating content for the next Crate Box that's going out to you, the listener. It's how we support the show. In there, you will find all kinds of cool stuff. Recently, we just shipped out a bunch of shot glasses, stickers, prints, things from listeners. In fact, aren't we giving away some random Toots?
Yeah.
Tell me about this.
If you guys don't know Toots the Unicorn, first of all, go to Indiegogo.com and find Toots, T-O-O-T-Z. Only a few days left, 6 days left, and he's so close to the end. Toots the Unicorn is a small Internet of Things unicorn that farts rainbows when you get a notification.
I laugh every time.
Do I need to say anything else?
No.
You should be over at Indiegogo right now, buying this right now.
Support that. And if you are one of our lucky Cratejoy folks, you are going to get two of the Toots randomly in random boxes. So two of our listeners who support us this way.
You won't get two in one box. Two subscribers will randomly see a Toots in their crate if they subscribe.
That is correct. So head on over there now, frogpants.cratejoy.com. This is exclusive to Current Geek, and we love doing it. It's a lot of work, but we think it's worth it, and I think it'll be worth it to you fine folks as well. So go check that out. Again, frogpants.cratejoy.com.
America scores and wins.
Alrighty, you know what that means. Let's dive right into what we'd like to call the pop quiz. Today, George is on the line for all his knowledge. No stress, no pressure. If you get something right, you get it wrong, Tom will keep score the whole time, and we'll compare you to the averages as they stand currently with our other guests And for some reason, this thing is being slow at opening, and I don't know why. So I'm going to waste a bunch of time talking. Okay, there it is. I got it.
You ever think about opening it before the show?
I did, but it closed, and I don't know why. I think something's up with this app, so I'm going to have to change this. All right. First question in your category, which is Pan's Labyrinth. Pan's Labyrinth, the film I know that you like. Right? The film? Right? Are we right? You know, you like it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, good.
All right. Phew.
We've gotten this wrong before.
Yeah, we have.
Really?
The hilarious effect.
Yeah, it's always, I mean, it always works out because we're just having fun. But anyway, I'm glad to hear that. All right, here's your first question in the area of Pan's Labyrinth. What year was Pan's Labyrinth released?
When was it? It was like 2000.
You're definitely in the right decade.
I'm going to guess 2009. I don't know.
Let's check and see. Nope, it's 2006.
Yeah, you know what, though? You get 0.8 of a point because you got three of the digits in the year right, and six is really just nine upside down.
Well done. Well done. All right, next up. Who is the main character in the film? What is the name of this character?
Ophelia.
Oh, look at you. You got it right. Ophelia is correct, except you say it way better and cooler than I did. What country is the film set in?
Wakanda.
You said Spain. That is correct. It is set in Spain. Nicely done. Who is Ophelia's stepfather in Pan's Labyrinth?
Captain Vidal.
Dang, dude. And you also say that with such like flourish. That sounded great. I'd say Captain Vidal.
Speak Spanish.
Yeah, I know. It's good, though. Like, really good. All right. Captain Vidal is correct. I was going to say kind of like Gore. I was going to give you a hint, but it's all fine now. Ophelia's first task is to get a key. What animal is the key inside?
It's a toad.
You are correct. Oh man, it's killing it here.
Yeah, and he inverts his entire stomach out.
Oh, that's right. He basically disembowels the frog to get it, right?
No, she like makes it throw up, but it throws its like entire stomach inside out.
Oh, that's what it was. It's been too long. That's such a cool movie. Oh my gosh, the guy with the eyes on his hands and everything. So cool.
Yeah.
All right, next question. What year is Pan's Labyrinth set in? So it's set in a particular year. What year would that be?
1944.
Oh man. Nailing it, Tom.
Right after the Spanish Civil War.
All right. Did you get any bonus for knowing that? Tom,
the Spanish Civil War part?
Yeah.
I mean, who doesn't know the Spanish Civil War ended near 1940? Come on, Scott.
I won't say.
Stop pandering.
Pandering's Labyrinth? Is that what you're calling it?
There's Republicans and Franquistas against each other.
Those darn Republicans. All right, next up.
Ben Carson.
What actress plays the role of Ophelia? She was quite good, as I recall.
Her actors.
It's tricky, this one.
Did she have a name?
She did. Does.
Yeah,
does.
I thought she had a name. I don't know.
She doesn't. She does. She did and does, Tom. She has both. She had a name then. She has a name now. I don't know why I'm having fun with that. All right, so you don't
I
know?
I do not know this.
All right. It is Ivana Baquero.
Oh, come on.
Well,
you get a tenth of a point for that name just being ridiculous.
I kind of agree.
To remember.
Thank you for tacking that on the end. We think it's a lovely name.
The name is lovely. Absolutely.
All right. Final question. Who does the Fawn think Ophelia is?
The Princess Moana.
Man, nailed it, dude. All right. Well done. I think you probably had one of our higher scores, but we let Tom add it up and tell us. So, Tom, how'd you do?
Well, he had a 6.9, but then he got a 3-point streak bonus to bring it to 9.9.
Whoa. That is maybe the highest score. I'm trying to think if we had...
We had thousands one time.
Did we? Oh, yeah, we did. But anything...
Yes.
I find it entertaining
that you take the scores so seriously, you want to have, like, historical highs and lows.
Which is ironic, given the email we're going to read later, and you'll understand why when we get to it. But when we've had a scale of 1 to 10 as our final score, I think this might be the highest one.
There's no 1 to 10 scale. Who said there was a 1 to 10 scale?
I don't know. The way you do things.
I have to say, I think what you're trying to do, is you're trying to interpret rules you don't understand. And it takes years of study to understand these rules. But you're right in saying that he definitely had one of the highest level performances of any of our quiz.
Okay, there you go then. That is a perfect way to say it. Well done. You've done it. One of our better players. Let's dive on straight headlong into this.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
All right, it's Forecast. It's where we predict the future, and it's based on all kinds of things, technology and entertainment and just life in general. Sometimes it's way out there. Sometimes it's just knocking next door is not a way to say it, but I'll say it anyway. This week, we have a thought here from a long-term one. Who picked this? Tom, is this you, or is this... This may have been you, George. Who picked this one? The internet caching between planets thing. Was that you?
Right, that's me. I just put it in here.
I like it.
It's a long-term prediction. So this is assuming that we're going to colonize Mars. And I'm just... I'm thinking that there's going to be colonies on Mars, and they won't be able to be like accessing the Earth's internet in real time because of speed of light delay. So Mars will just have its own internet. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be a big business of people caching in between the two planets. So big server farms that are just caching all the most popular content from Earth's internet on Mars, and then vice versa.
So how often will it be updated? Like, if I'm on Mars, how quickly will I get to see all the cat videos that everyone on Earth is raving about?
Well, I mean, that would depend on... It would probably depend on, you know, distance and such, because the distance varies, so the speed of light delay is going to vary. I know it can take, like, hours to get a message to Mars. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to be... I think it would be more like more popular content gets updated faster. Mm-hmm. So like if people are requesting something a lot, like, you know, Netflix might have their own servers that are just have their stuff, and or more like just things that are updating a lot and that people are requesting a lot probably would be cache more frequently. And then like these the occasional sort of niche thing that one person wants, maybe you just have to request that and like wait overnight to get it.
Tom, do you think it's that'll happen? Are we just going to have a better communication system, or do we even need it? If there's, you know, I don't know, a couple of billion people on Mars, isn't that enough to maintain its own essentially private internet? Is that how this would work?
Well, but that's, I mean, sort of, but we always want to know what's in the other internet. That's why the internet spans the globe, right? Yeah, so yeah. I can see it. This is a really interesting thing because, as George pointed out, Mars and Earth aren't always the same distance. So I looked it up. Fizzlink.com estimates that at its most separated point in the orbits, the longest distance between, or the longest time delay between Mars and Earth is 21 minutes. And the closest is 4.3 minutes.
Mm. Okay, so it's not that long, but
yeah,
it's still long enough to give you a lot of latency.
Absolutely, and it's close enough that caching, like you're talking about, is worth doing, right? Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. it's like, well, you know, we need to keep this stuff available on a good basis, and we'll just update it, you know, as we can.
Isn't there like a 2-year period where it's behind by on the other side of the sun too, which would make it harder?
I assume you could get around that, but it's going to add a little delay, isn't it?
Right, right.
Because you're going to have to bounce off of something to get over there.
So does quantum computing answer this at all? Like, is this a...
No, no. It's the speed of light. Speed of light's the speed of light.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Stupid light.
Yeah, I know, right? Come on, light.
There's, you know, in science fiction, you have these like quantum teleportation things that you could send the information instantly, but I don't think those are ever going to happen. Mm. I think you're going to be stuck with the speed of light, and you're just going to have to, you know, everything that's important to you, you're going to have to cache it locally because you don't want to click on a web link and wait 20 minutes to get it.
Mm-hmm. No, so is science fiction ever I mean, I'm sure they have, and I'm dumb, but Tom, you're a sword and laser guy, and I'm going to ask a dumb question. Are there any prominent science fiction tales that address this issue? Not maybe the internet per se, maybe because that wasn't around when the book was written, but just addresses the communications issue between colonized planets.
Oh, yeah. Kim Stanley Robinson. Wait, I'm sorry. Not Kim Stanley Robinson. I think it's Alistair Reynolds has a thing called chinging, where you actually send yourself into a telepresence robot so that you can talk with someone who's on another planet. And there's an AI that will anticipate what you will say and what the responses will be, and then kind of correct as it goes.
Oh, wow.
So that you both feel like you're having a real-time conversation.
Oh, that's super cool.
Yeah.
I dig on that. Yeah, it's an interesting problem that it's funny, we don't know we have the problem until we have the technology that presents the problem. But I really like that prediction. It's a fun one to think about. It makes me want, there's this new game called Solar... Opolis? Ah, crap. This isn't helping anyone who made that game.
Is it the one that's very similar to No Man's Sky?
No, it's more like Masters of Orion or even like Civilization. It's a 4X type strategy game, but set in space. It just came out and people are losing their minds over it. And
Space Engine?
No, what's it called? Someone in the chat will clear all this up, I'm sure, shortly here.
Stellaris?
Stellaris, that's it. Stellaris. That is something else.
Thank you, Ken,
apparently.
From Chicago.
Thanks, Ken. Constantly tempted to go pick that up because it presents you with issues like this. Tom, I think you'd like it because listen to this. Randomly, a friend of mine's playing it. Well, a friend of the show, John Jagger, he's playing it.
Oh, okay.
And he runs into a planet. He does some exploration, finds this planet that is a bunch of people that were sent out there that we've forgotten had left and colonized or something. I'm saying this wrong, I'm sure, but it's close. And they find out that we had forsaken the religions of our past and they kept with it. And now we're at war with them because they think we're, you know, these horrible infidels. Like, it's got all that great nuance that you like in this sort of stuff. It seems like something that we should probably get and neither of us have time for. So.
Yes, exactly.
Just throw that out there. Anyway, Stellaris, get it.
By the way, Ken from Chicago, being the gentleman of chat that he is, pointed out that Tonegosa actually posted Stellaris first.
This is why these guys rule. That's why the tadpole and the chat realm and everybody in our stuff, that's why they're awesome. They're always opening doors for each other and laying down their coats.
Reminds me, we are remiss. We forgot to thank our subredditors today. Captain Kipper, K Bouton 1, Tipo DeCinta, Wayne something. That's his name. We're not forgetting it. Piscator NF, and of course, George, all suggested things that we used on the show today at currentgeek.reddit.com.
Yes, please use that all the time. Here's an email. We get those too. Feedback and emails come to us at currentgeek@gmail.com. Got one from someone named List Hater, and you'll find out why. And again, this is a little ironic given what I said earlier. But anyway, dear geekers that happen to be current, when do we stop making lists of the best to worst Marvel movies? Can't we just enjoy them all? I hate lists. Signed, List Hater. Well, List Hater.
Don't hate the list. Well, no, I guess you just hate the list. There's really nothing else to hate.
Sure. There. I think I understand what he means, and I kind of agree on the Marvel front. It gets to a point where there's so many of these movies that it's not like the original Star Wars trilogy anymore, where you can kind of just say, well, which of the Indiana Jones movies do you like best? Well, I really like one, then three, then two, and then that fourth one is way out there. Well, that seems like that's an easy thing to kind of quantify, and you're going to find a lot of similar thinking from other people, except I think Temple of Doom's better than the third one. But anyway, I'm not here to argue that. We could argue that, but I won't. Point is, I kind of don't need to have this. I don't need to know that what order people are putting Marvel movies in. I know which ones I'm enjoying and which ones I'm not, I guess. And I know that I enjoyed Winter Soldier slightly better than this new one, but not much. They basically share the same seat. I know that I love almost all the rest of them, so it's good enough for me. Yet there I was earlier in the show demanding a 0 through 10 score from Tom. So I know I'm a world of contradictions constantly. Any thoughts?
We're making a list of highest scores.
I guess so. I guess so. Well, how do you guys feel? Like, George, how do you feel about lists and stuff? Our pop culture is full of these now. Everybody wants to know best to worst all the time. Why do we feel so compelled to do that?
Well, I don't know. People just want to rank things on a list.
People are weird, right?
The list is just like any criticism, though. It's all going to be subjective to a degree. So my list of best to worst movies is going to be different from someone else. So I don't know. It's
well, let's ask all three of us, what is our all-time favorite movie? I'll bet you money that none of us say the same thing. So let's just try it. So what's your favorite movie of all time? Is it Pan's Labyrinth or something else?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's... Laberinto del Fauno. Yes.
Okay. There's your favorite movie of all time. Tom, what's yours?
Casablanca.
Okay. Look, you are so old school. I love it. All right. Then there's me, and I would probably say people are gonna think I'm gonna say Mad Max Fury Road. I'm probably not. I think my favorite movie, and it fluctuates sometimes because sometimes Empire Strikes Back is up there. But it's a little movie called Avalon that came out in 1990. And there's a few movies called Avalon. This one's very specifically a Barry Levinson movie about what it's like to come to America in the sort of post-industrial age and try to raise a family all the way up through the 70s. And it's utterly fantastic and just is the most Americana, rad, cool movie ever. And so I would say that. Case in point, all three of us said vastly different films. So I'm with List Hater. I don't think you should hate it necessarily, but I think this is just the way it is. We all think a little bit differently, and I think Mad Max Fury Road's the best movie in the last 10 years, but do you know how many people disagree with me? Tons of them. So
make a list of the people who most disagree with you.
Yeah, there you go. And be a list lover.
I did a quick search. There are a ton of articles on the psychological reasons why we like to make lists. And part of it is that it just organizes information and taxes our brain less. Mm. So when we particularly make a list of our favorites of things, we're thinking like, there's so many Marvel movies. Let me organize them into the ones I like so I can think about those and just forget about the ones I don't like.
I'm all about taxing my brain less. No new taxes, I like to say.
Read my lips.
Read my frontal lobe. No new taxes. All right. Excellent email. Send your emails to currentgeek@gmail.com. It's going to do it for the show. George, it was a pleasure having you on. Oh,
by the way, before you say goodbye to George, I just want to say, Jaime, who made Toots the Unicorn, would like us to tell people that tootstheunicorn.com also works. TOOTZ.
Okay.
Toots the Unicorn. And he's already sold one. Good job, Kirk. Oh,
very nice. You guys help him. He's awesome. He was on the show once. You may remember that as well. And he's just a rad part of our community and deserves all the help he can get. And they're farting unicorns. Gosh dang it.
So, rainbows.
Yeah, rainbows. Yeah. Farting rainbow, rainbow farting unicorns is how it is described on this paper here. All right, that's going to do it for us. George, how can people find more of you on the internet?
I have my own podcast, Con Langery. You could go to conlangery.com, conlangery.com. And I talk about, it's about constructed languages, but we also talk about natural languages and linguistics and stuff. And this month, actually, if you want more talk about the Paramount versus Axanar stuff, and specifically about the Klingon part of it and why the LCS got involved, I got this month's episode is all about that. I got our lawyer, Mark Randazza, the president, Christoph Grandsteur, Kovitz of the Language Creation Society, and Sai, who's been working with us on that. So you can check that out. Also, you can find the Language Creation Society at conlang.org, conlang.org. If you go to conlang.org/Axanar, you can find our press release about the Axanar stuff and a whole bunch of links for press if you want to read all about our role in that case. That's about it for me, and I'm GA Corley on Twitter and all the social networks. So
nice. And the whole thing's translated into Klingon, right? We can go find it all in Klingon. No?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I did post if you want to play it before you go out. You want to check it out before you go out. Just a little example of what fans have done with Klingon that we think should be encouraged, and that copywriting a language would cause problems. I think I posted it in the Skype a little video.
Here, I can play a piece of this. Hold on. Here we go. Okay, I'm going to play it. Let's get it showing for the users at home. There you go.
music, though.
I'm going to start dancing.
Open Klingon style. Klingon style.
Oh, this is great. It's all in Klingon, dude. That's amazing. All right, we'll put that in the
I
chat.
I declare that video a kapla.
Yeah.
It's
amazing. Yeah. It's all very tricky. Tom Merritt, anything you'd like to mention before we go, sir?
Yeah, just a huge thanks to the people who have ordered Pilot X on Inkshares.com. I'm only 59 books away from hitting the publishing goal. So it would get fully published. So anybody who's already ordered it, can't thank you enough. And if you've been thinking about like, hey, I want to read Tom's book about a guy who flies a time machine around and maybe stops a dimensional war, but might have to kill everyone he knows to do it. Check it out. Pilot X on Inkshares.com.
So cool. Please do check it out. For us, that's going to do it. We've loved having George here. We love being here today. Thank you guys for joining us. Thank you, everybody in the live chat room. If you'd like to have more to do with the show, all the links can be found at currentgeek.com. Oh gosh, what else? Current Geek on Twitter, Scott Johnson on Twitter, Ace Detect on Twitter. Don't forget our Reddit, currentgeek.reddit.com. currentgeek@gmail.com is the email address. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and for George. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we take a look at the first artificial intelligence attorney to be hired by a major U.S. law firm and what it means for the future of AI and the legal industry. The IBM cognitive computer Watson first hit widespread public awareness a few years ago when the computer took on various challenges, including the game show Jeopardy. This was notable because the clues in Jeopardy use a lot of grammar and word tricks to hint at the desired answers. Now this technology is beginning to be applied in some real-world contexts. One of these is a shopper assistance robot being tested in certain retail stores like Lowe's. But this week, the Watson computer upgraded to the next level of profession as an AI attorney called Ross, based on IBM's Watson technology, was officially hired to work in the bankruptcy department of Baker & Hostetler. Although reports have it that other law firms are also licensing this tech, Baker is the first to jump in the pool officially. But will this be the first step to removing all those human attorney types, like yours truly, with soulless automations of the law? Probably not, although cognitive computing like Ross could change the legal services industry, just like robotics and machinery have changed manufacturing. What Ross claims to offer is a rapid jump in efficiency in legal research and case law updates. For example, Ross is able to take questions in plain English, and then it reads through the entire body of relevant law, and returns an answer with citations from legislation and case law to bring the questioner up to speed quickly. Unlike current legal research tools like Lexis, Ross narrows the results to a few highly relevant answers instead of thousands, and provides answers in a casual, understandable language like a human colleague would. Plus, Ross monitors for law updates and informs the user when changes occur. This is the type of work that typically gets assigned to junior-level attorneys and legal assistants, which means that some of the overhead associated with law practice can be shifted to work on other types of projects. That should allow firms to more efficiently use time and money of their clients to reach the desired result. But there's still going to be a human hand involved thanks to the heavy regulation applied to the legal services industry. Who knows, maybe Ross will pass the bar exam in a few states, and then the sky's the limit on how far this cognitive computer technology can go. The bottom line is, even the Baker firm refers to this technology as an AI legal assistant instead of an attorney, and there's still a long way to go before we can replace all those attorneys. Nevertheless, this is the type of AI we only dreamed of previously in shows like Star Trek, and the legal profession as well as others can only stand to benefit and get better as a result. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.